Sure.
Okay, everyone, sorry for the technical glitch there. We'll try and get that sorted out, or Justin's going to run from... He's going to see his slides, but you aren't until we find them. Justin Fisher is the technical director of the Booz Allen Hamilton Cryptographic Security Test Lab. He has 10 years of experience consulting and testing for Common Criteria, FIPS 140, and related standards. He is also involved with the development of CC protection profiles through participation in NIAP and international technical communities. I guess using his best Britney Spears intonation, he will be speaking to us on the topic of FIPS. I did it again.
Thank you. Unfortunately, we have some technical difficulties and we don't have my slides up, but if we can get that corrected before the end of the presentation, we'll get them up there. And if not, this will all be very surprising to you, slide by slide, and we'll just send these out afterwards. So basically, I wanted to give a brief overview of what many people in here would recognize as NIAP policy letter number 5. Provide some information about, for those that aren't aware, how exactly to interpret that, what the points of overlap are between the FIPS testing and the CC testing, with the overall goal being obviously to make sure that you're not having to do the same work over and over and over again, multiple times. So, obviously NIST provides a framework to evaluate large amounts of security and functionality that are of interest to the CC community. And of course, we want to make sure that CC is taking advantage of this, but there are limitations. So understanding what does and doesn't overlap will help vendors manage certification test planning much more effectively. So within the collaborative protection profiles, there's a lot of security functionality that is directly testable under CAVP, such as asymmetric key generation and establishment, symmetric encryption, decryption, deterministic random bit generation, and of course others. The collaborative PPs will typically use ISO language for those crypto requirements, but the algorithms and their operating parameters, such as key sizes and modes, et cetera, are typically consistent with what's approved by NIST. And the assurance activities are then generally derived from NIST validation system documents. We don't explicitly say go out and get NIST validation, because if you're validating outside the US or Canada, national schemes don't necessarily recognize that. However,
we have files.
Oh.
They're just named wrong. So they're listed as R30B.
Okay.
With a different capacity. Don't know why. Okay. So it's under R30B,
Terran. Oh, okay.
Let's just make sure that, is that it?
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay.
There you go.
We have our slides, everybody. Okay. Picking right back up. So like I said, NIAP Policy Letter 5 in the U.S. does require that CAVP certificates be acquired in order to satisfy the algorithm testing. So when you're making a decision as a vendor, a sort of build versus buy determination, or whether you need to get extra testing done, you're going to have to determine first what algorithms you're implementing, and then you're going to have to go through several checks in order to see if you're actually okay here. These don't have to be done in this particular order, but the three checks are your version correspondence, your algorithm correspondence, and the platforms. So if any of these checks fail, you're going to need to unfortunately do some additional testing. So the first thing you're always going to have to figure out, obviously, is understanding what algorithm implementation is being used. Are you using a full FIPS validated module, or are you using just CAVP validated algorithm implementations? At some point in the future, we would expect that CMVP module, full module certificates will be required, but for now, it's certainly acceptable to just get algorithm implementations tested. If you're a vendor that does a large volume of evaluations, oftentimes you'll see a single shared library being used. And this is very typical. However, as you'll see in the coming slides, just having a validated library is not enough. So the expectation is, as an ST author, as an evaluator, as a vendor that's just doing their own internal due diligence, you'll need to identify the initial set of CAVP certificates that you expect to apply so that they can be examined in detail. AES, whatever, RSA, whatever, specific certificate numbers. So the first thing you'll look at is the version correspondence. So every algorithm implementation has a version associated with it. And it could be a hardware, software, firmware, or hybrid implementation. If you as the ST author wishes to claim any algorithm certificates, the version of the implementation used must be the same as what appears on the corresponding validation lists. So if, for example, your product uses OpenSSL FIPS object model module 2014, you'd better refer to the certificate and make sure that it does say 2014 on that list. As far as the algorithm correspondence goes, there's multiple things that you're going to need to check. The first, obviously, that you would expect to do for any evaluation is that for each algorithm, is the remainder of the ST consistent with the SFR? So oftentimes you might have a case where just a consistency check where you might be implementing AES in counter or CBC or GCM mode. If your certificate only has CBC, that's obviously a problem. Then for each algorithm, is there actually a corresponding CAVP certificate? Are the certificate's claims consistent with the ST? And for each certificate, are the claims made in that certificate suitable to meet policy letter number 5? So I've taken here an example from the policy letter 5 FAQ, where if you are validating counter DRBG with AES, you'd be expected to check the DRBG validation list, look for counter DRBG, and then AES 128 or 92 or 192 or 256, and then the DRBG certificate must correspond to the AES validation certificates as well. So here's an example for FCS RBG extended 1.1. In this hypothetical security target, we've claimed AES counter DRBG, and we can examine from the certificate below it that the counter DRBG has been validated. It's important to make sure that the emphasis here is also on ST consistency and not just consistency with the policy letter. So a security algorithm claim must include the sum total usage of the algorithm in all of the security functions. So, for example, if you have an AES CBC claim, but the toe uses both CBC and GCM in your algorithm implementation, you've got a problem. Better make sure to check that first so that the CAVP correspondence only needs to happen once. You'd hate to have to go back and do it again just because you didn't review the consistency internally first. Oftentimes, the algorithm certificate can and will claim more than what the ST does. That's fine. But subsequent CC evaluation activities should show that the toe's cryptographic functionality can be limited to what is claimed in the ST. So, for example, if you've claimed AES CBC 128 and 256 in your SSH implementation, but 128 and 192 and 256 are all in the certificate, it just needs to be clear to the reader at some point that that AES 192 that you're not citing is not used, whether that's administratively disabled or just fundamentally not part of the algorithm suite that's configured. And if a policy doesn't require a specific option to be chosen, then any value for it is permissible. So, for example, from the previous slide, the counter DRBG AES is satisfied with the DRBG validation list. Any of AES 128, AES 192, AES 256. There's a whole bunch of other options when you're configuring DRBG testing, like presence or absence of a derivation function, whether or not prediction resistance is used, whether or not reseed is implemented, and the number of output blocks. All of these can be specified when generating the algorithm test vectors. And a lot of this will show up on the algorithm certificate, but none of it's used to determine whether or not policy letter 5 is satisfied. So just make sure that if you're doing this comparison yourself, that that you should be, that just make sure that you're only looking at the parts of the algorithm certificate that are relevant. So most algorithm correspondence is relatively straightforward to show. In the interest of time, I'll go ahead and skip this slide. I do want to mention that for the key establishment requirements, FCS-CKM2 in the network device PP, CPP, a lot of people have been having issues with that. Stay tuned in the future. We expect that the newer versions of NIST SP800-56A and B, moving forward once those are published, will be the versions that get used. And the key derivation functions for those will be the key derivation functions for the trusted protocols that are claimed. Right now, a lot of people have a problem where the key agreement scheme certificate uses a KDF that is not actually used by any of the trusted protocols, the single step KDF. However, new versions of the standard are eliminating that. So next, we have our platform correspondence. So every algorithm implementation is tested on hardware, firmware, or software. Ideally, the TOE will use the exact same environment as what was tested, but that's not always realistic. Obviously, with so many different processors, so many different operating systems, there's oftentimes going to be differences, unless you're a vendor that goes out and does the algorithm testing specifically on your CC implementation. So NIAP does allow for software equivalency within limits. So if you're using an operating system that is a different minor version than what the algorithm was tested on, that's okay. Major version is not, but minor is. A processor, if it's the same manufacturer and the same family, so for example, an Intel Core i5 64-bit x86, it doesn't matter which specific processor is used. And then any use of hardware acceleration or non-use, that must be the same. Then finally, for corrective actions, there's several options for a vendor to pursue, but each has their own challenge. If there's a version correspondence issue, the vendor should always be using the latest version of what's been certified. However, if the vendor is using a brand new version that hasn't been tested yet, the possibility of being forced to downgrade to what FIPS validated is a point of frustration. If the issue is algorithm correspondence, in many cases, a vendor might have no choice but to implement a code change. This is obviously frustrating if you've paid for a third-party library, and it's out of date, and they haven't gotten, for example, FIPS 186-4 KeyGen. What do you do? And if the testing's for platform correspondence, you may need to provide an equivalency argument as to why your platform is the same. But if none is feasible, retesting may be needed. And like I said, if a vendor doesn't control the source code, this can be extremely difficult and frustrating, time-consuming, etc. So this is always something you want to make sure you're lining up before you go into evaluation, so that you're not caught by surprise and you don't have to do it again. Lastly, I had some information here about module overlap. CMVP module validation isn't required for CC. However, you should be aware that there are certain areas that might help, such as entropy assessment, self-test performance, key storage, and with the note that in many cases, the software module will put responsibilities on the environment. For example, OpenSSL might expect key storage to be done by the environment. In this case, you'll need to make sure that your TOE is actually implementing those things as described. So in conclusion, CAVP certificates may demonstrate that a TOE satisfies crypto requirements. This may eliminate the need for duplicate testing, but only if it's been done in the manner that's allowed by the policy. Ensuring that the ST is internally consistent first will help eliminate reuse or eliminate duplicate effort, because you'll validate once what certificates are required. And if you're relying on a third-party provider, corrective action is often difficult to arrange, so you want to have as much time and flexibility to do this as possible. So if anybody has any questions, this is how you can reach me, but otherwise, that's it for me. Go ahead.
Please make sure you get right close to the microphone.
Okay. Yeah, hi, I'm Bill Shelton from Juniper Networks. You mentioned for NIAP software equivalency for minor software release versions. Is there a definition of that? Because every vendor numbers their software in different ways.
Right. So in our experience, and I don't want to speak for NIAP, obviously there's NIAP people sitting here, and I don't want to undercut them or anything. In general, we've been looking like Linux kernel versions or secondary version numbers of releases. So, you know, for example, Red Hat 6.0 versus 6.1. I mean, typically, like you said, the major minor distinctions oftentimes really arbitrary. However, when it comes to Linux, for example, a lot of the distributions will use major minor numbering and they'll go off of just the minor. For Windows, they'll be looking at Windows 2008 is different from Windows 2012, but Windows 2012 R2 is the same thing as 2012. So the secondary distinction is usually in the numbers. If you wanted to make some sort of architectural or source code based argument for why something that's designated as a major revision numerically actually isn't programmatically, those would be the people to talk to.
So you're saying there's not a distinction, it's just a judgment call?
Basically, in our estimation, it has been, yes. Anything else?
If that's it for questions, then please join me in thanking Justin for his talk.